The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, hello and welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition for this week. We didn't give you all a heads up about today. We have a special guest on today that we're happy to welcome back. We've got Matt Kaufman from Calamos Investments back with us. He's the Senior Vice President and Head of ETFs at Calamos, and he's been on the show previously talking about what we generally call buffered ETFs, which are investment products that have a downside protection of some degree with some upward performance capabilities, we'll call it. And I think that's part of the structured products or structured protection group at Calamos. But in the weeks or months since we've had him on before, there's been a few articles come up talking about these things that raised a few questions. We had some listeners out there that sent Jim in a few questions that we thought who best to address these questions as other than Matt, who is intimately knowledgeable about these offerings from Calamos. And there's some other competitive products too out there, but we've talked previously about the Calamos product. So I'll welcome Jim and Matt in whichever order they want to unmute and speak with me. But Matt, thanks a lot for joining us once again. It's always a pleasure to have you.
Oh, thanks for having me. Always good to be here.
Yeah. And Jim is, I'll have to admit that these questions from our listeners came into Jim and the articles in question. I don't remember if, Jim, you can clear up if you read them before hearing from listeners, or maybe the listeners prompted you to look at the articles in question today. But I have not read the articles, but I know, you know, generally some of the chatter that's been going on out there about these buffered products. So one thing I think we should probably do, Jim, as I turn it over to you and ultimately to Matt, is somebody, Jim or Matt, needs to do a quick 60-second summary of what these buffered ETFs are all about. So if someone hadn't listened to our previous shows on this, they'll have some idea of where we're coming from on this show. So I don't know which of the two of you wants to tackle that, but
you said 60 seconds. So that rules
it's gotta
me
be Matt,
out.
Then,
I'll take 60 hours. Yeah. Matt, you do what Chris is asking for in 60 seconds.
All right. Fair enough. Set the timer. Here we go.
Okay.
So the buffer ETF, the first one was launched in 2018, but the buffered structure, the idea is that you can deliver the upside performance of an index like the S&P 500 to a cap rate, you know, there's no free lunch, with a built-in protection level, say 10%, 15% protection over an outcome period like 1 year. So you get the upside of the market to a cap rate, built-in protection level over a defined outcome period. That's essentially what buffers are designed to do. If you look historically, some of the first buffers appeared via structured notes in the 1980s. So, you know, quite a while ago, almost 40 years ago. Now you can get buffered outcomes in nearly every investment wrapper, structured products, insurance products. You can get buffered annuities. You can get buffered UITs, buffered mutual funds, and the latest, as we talked about, the buffered ETF. I think the democratization of that buffered structure is what has a lot of people asking about them. A lot of people, Cliff asked us, so we're going to talk about complaining about them. So how'd I do?
Pretty nice. I didn't have an official timer to set, okay. But that was right about the sweet spot, so I appreciate it. Jim would just be getting warmed up at this point, so I'm glad you took that on, Matt.
I do. Yes, I would just be getting warmed up, but I did want to welcome you on, Matt, and thank Chris for the intro. Before we dive into this, I'm going to get a little bit into how this came up, folks. I received about 3 or 4 emails from listeners asking, hey, have you seen these articles from AQR, a company called AQR? We'll get into a second who they are and what they were writing about. And I had seen them, Chris. I will admit I read them, but they bored me because I question anything. I always question why. I'm like a perennial 2-year-old. Why? And I question why AQR was coming out with these articles. But I also feel if you understand how buffered products are used, or at least how we consider using them, and we on the podcast, meaning Chris and I and our firm as a whole, and recognize the podcast itself revolves around distribution. It's a retirement podcast. It's not an investment podcast. We don't geek out on the hottest thing. We're not James Cramer or Jim Cramer, whatever he goes by, screaming with a shirt sleeves rolled up and untucked and screaming to buy this and buy that and the world's coming to an end or the world is going to go up forever and all this other stupid ass crap. Excuse my French. We talk about how to help retirees do one thing, spend their freaking money. And that's what we're trying to teach you. We don't want you to become the Debbie Downer. My dad, before he died last year, implored me to warn you guys of the Debbie Downers in the assisted living place that he lived at were the worst residents because they're the ones who had money but could no longer spend it. And for one reason or another, while they still had the health, inclination, desire, and ability earlier in their retirement, they chose not to spend it. And a lot of people choose not to spend money because emotionally they freak out. You freak out watching your portfolio drop. Dropping either because inflation is taking it secretly, government's taking it overtly with taxes, Wall Street's taking it with volatility, or God forbid, you're taking it and actually spending it. Oh, gasp, how could someone do that? You spent 30, 40, 50 years growing it. You're loath to spend it. We see that all the time. And we found and had been using structured products, not necessarily structured notes, Matt, but I have used annuities, if you didn't want to get into structured products itself, structured notes, annuities were one of the only ways to do what the ETF world has finally, as Matt said, democratized and brought to the masses transparently. And that's what I like about it. We don't view buffered products as accumulation products. We view them as a distribution product, not for the entire portfolio, but for a subset of your portfolio, what we call a position, if you will, with a specific task or job. That's how we view it. And the 100% buffered product, which Matt may chat about, is one of the products that Calamos offers. The 100% buffered product, to me, offers a retiree a chance to get a return greater than cash, but with volatility, I won't say on par with cash, because in a buffered ETF, it's a positive and a negative. The ETF industry has to fully disclose and be transparent on fees. Annuities and structured notes, they can quote unquote bake the fee into the yield spread or the yield you're going to get or the potential cap you're going to be given. So it's harder to see the fee. So theoretically, on 100% buffered product, you won't lose principal due to market fluctuation, but you could lose the fee of the ETF, which is generally 50 basis points to 80 basis points, depending on which company you're looking at. So I like to compare a buffered, 100% buffered ETF maybe to an ultra-short-term bond fund, which has slight chance for a little bit of volatility, not much. That's my personal belief. But when you have companies like AQR and others trying to compare buffered products, they throw the name, Matt, buffered product, almost like annuities are lambasted. But you come from the annuity side in the past, and I do want you to share with our listeners how you helped create smart beta ETFs, how in the past you came from the institutional side, and what you have done. But you know better than any that annuities, I hate annuities and so should you, Ken Fisher, he throws all annuities, the good ones and the bad ones, into one big clump. And I feel this article from AQR was trying to do the same, trying to throw all buffered products under the boat and look not at them individually. Now, they claim in their second article they looked at things individually, but I still dispute that, and I'll let you chime in, Matt, when I explain the article. I'm just trying to get our listeners up to speed on what I'm trying to do here. When you listeners, and you all geek out on this, you're VGers, when you evaluate a 100% buffered ETF, you need to compare it to a cash-like asset, not pure cash, because the fee of the ETF will be subtracted out from the cap rate. And theoretically, a zero or negative year in the market, you will still lose 50 to 80 basis points. Not much, but you theoretically could still lose. Whereas a true cash-like account, your principal is not going to budge. You may lose due to inflation, but it's not going to budge. But what Matt's product and other 100% buffer ETFs can offer you is the potential for a greater than cash-like return. And that's how at least the 100% buffer product should be evaluated. The problem is articles like AQR, which try to just bash buffered ETFs as a whole, just like Ken Fisher bashes all annuities as a whole, there's an ulterior motive, at least in my mind, behind it. Fisher, he manages assets. He charges an uncapped AUM strategy. He doesn't want you putting your money in annuities. He wants you giving it to him. As I said repeatedly, as far as Ken Fisher's firm goes, he doesn't want you to have a guaranteed lifetime stream of income, but his firm definitely wants to charge you an AUM fee that will give them a lifetime stream of steady income, or at least until you die, and then hopefully your beneficiaries and heirs will continue using Ken Fisher's firm. So he hates annuities, but at the same time, he loves the guaranteed stream of income that his fee is going to give. That, to me, is a conflict of interest, or at least an ulterior motive for coming out with this catchy phrase, I hate annuities and so should you. So I looked at AQR, and I'm very familiar with AQR, and I just kind of said to myself, why? Why are they coming out with this? What are they trying to do? What's their potential motive? Well, AQR is a quant firm. Matt, I could not in 20 seconds, let alone 20 minutes or 20 days, describe what a quant firm is. Can you? Because I know you know better than I do.
Yeah, we can dive into that. You know, AQR has been around for a long time. You know, they have a lot of hedge fund strategies. And so that's largely what you would get from a quantitative investment shop. Their goal is to provide risk-adjusted returns, improve your Sharpe ratio, sometimes beat a benchmark. But that is the ultimate goal. So, you know, you compare that with what the goal of a buffered strategy might be. You know, it's a lot different than, you know, what AQR's goals are. And so I think that might be where some of this disconnect happens. But yeah, happy to dive into that.
Okay.
So, and before he says any more, just a translation thing for Matt, just so he knows, when Jim uses the phrase throw under the boat, that's one step worse than being thrown under the bus. because obviously you get run over by the bus, but if you're thrown under the boat, you're run over by the boat and you're drowning at the same time. So it's even worse. So when you hear him say that, that's what you should interpret.
I guess you know, one has a better chance of survival than the other.
Maybe.
You don't listen to my podcast all the time. I tend to get I have my own sayings, and
they're usually a combination of well-known sayings, and he combines them in a special gym way, and this is one of them. Our listeners are used to hearing the phrase thrown under the boat.
There you go.
But since you're a guest, I just wanted to make sure you understood where he was coming from there.
Yeah, appreciate that. Yeah.
All right, all right. Back on track here, folks. So anyways, AQR comes out with this article. And in the article, there's two articles, actually, because the first article, they will lambast it a little bit because they took, and Matt will get into this, they took three broad categories of ETFs and called them, for lack of a better term, buffered products. But they were three separate ones, and they combined them all together, and they tried to come out and say, hey, you know, the sizzle isn't worth the steak in this particular case. And that you would have been better off utilizing a mixture of stocks and cash. And that got a lot of comments from a lot of very smart asset managers. I believe BlackRock was one of them. Did you guys reply to this first article, Matt?
No, we didn't take any public reply. I'm happy to talk to you all and your audience about what we saw in the AQR article. At my own personal opinion, is I think debating these ideas in the public square is a good thing. I think we need to do it with integrity. And so, I think it's a good thing. But if we only have one side of the argument, I think what we risk is the listener or the reader wonders what's true. They wonder, like, okay, we hear one person's opinion. They're obviously, have some bias because they have hedge funds. Those have high fees, and the goal is risk management. And on the other side of the equation, you have a democratized ETF with low fees that also offers risk management. And so, I think it's important for investors to hear both sides. Like, I'm not against AQR publishing its own research and opinion, but I do think that, there should be some discourse in the public square. So that's why we're here.
Perfect. So then why don't you go with it? So folks, if you want the articles, they will be posted in the show notes. In order. So there's the first article. I'll make sure Joe posts that one first. And then the second article directly below it is the second one, which was published in response to the criticism of the first one. But do keep in mind, AQR does have a little bit, to me, of incentive to bash buffers, especially when you have some endowments. University of Connecticut was the first. I don't know if there's others that have dropped using alts and hedge funds, which AQR is known for or was known for, to hedge their risk in their endowments, and they've gone to buffered ETFs. And you can read their reasoning behind it. But one of it is what Matt mentioned. They liked the transparency and the lower costs. And I think there could be, the cynic in me said, there could be some fear that this could catch on and move. I don't want to defend what that endowment is doing, but I do have respect for AQR. They tend to favor alternative strategies over complex option strategies, and to make that perfectly clear. And they tend to, I guess, lean towards more traditional diversification. And they seem to be skeptical, Matt, of anything that caps upside and comes with a cost, and especially in the use of options. So they share all that in there. But one of the things I want you to touch on, Matt, which confused me, is they kept saying, hey, as we took this data, yes, we started with three broad categories and combined them, but hey, in this second study, we looked at just buffered products. Now, they could only look at buffered products from January of 2020 through April of 2025, a very short five and a quarter year period. So read into that what you want. But when they started looking at just buffered products, they said, in their opinion, if they were to take, and I'm definitely paraphrasing, if they were to take the percentage of equities that the buffered product was exposed to and put that, and Matt, maybe you know, I can't remember off the top of my head, if they set a broad-based index or a particular stock, I don't know if they looked at a...
Yeah, I think they were looking at S&P 500.
Okay, the S&P. And the rest in cash, that mix would beat a buffered product. But remember, folks, they weren't looking at 100% buffered products. And I fear the baby's going to be thrown out with the bath, not the cat. I don't know what the hell the cat got into this. The baby's going to be thrown out with the bath water. And it just made me scratch my head. How can you look at a buffered product which has 100% exposure to the reference asset and say it was only had a 60 or a 70 or an 80% exposure to equities? So 80% should have been the S&P, 20% in cash, or 70 and 30, or 50 and 50. That just confused the heck out of me. Now, Matt has an explanation for that. So
yeah, go ahead.
Why don't you jump into this, Matt, and try to point out, we're not going to bash AQR. I have respect for them. They're good at what they do. My fear is, just like Ken Fisher has screwed the annuity industry in the eyes of retirees, that these products, at least the 100% buffer and 20% buffer, which are the two main ones we use, or 30% buffer on the UIT side, it's going to cloud people's judgment on these who still are steeped in accumulation and not understanding in distribution. You have to worry about sequence of return risk and emotional inability to spend money. Okay, Matt.
All right, appreciate that, Jim. I think I learned a new Jimism, cat in the bath. I think I'm going to use that one.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
I don't know how a cat got into
that. I'm not sure.
I think it's great. It's great. Yeah, just to give a brief overview of AQR, again, a lot of respect for them. One of their founding principals, Cliff Asness, with a few others, they were University of Chicago PhDs. They built AQR in 1998 on a few different main strategy categories. Factor investing, that's made its way into the ETF space lately. Value, quality, momentum. There's alternative strategies, managed futures, market neutral. A lot of these strategies are core to Calamos's business as well. And so we find a lot of value in what AQR is doing. Calamos has similar strategies as well, but we go all up and down that adoption curve, I would say, not just doing those hedge fund replication strategies. One of our biggest funds is a market neutral income strategy, but then being able to democratize access to things in a way that people can actually understand and provide certainty to them. And so you go from, did I beat the S&P 500 or, can I stochastically or statistically beat the S&P 500 with my strategy? Where the more broader question, as Jim was saying, is, will I have enough for retirement? These are much more personal questions that require much more certainty from a strategy. The buffered space has been around for a very long time. As I said, the article that was written was attacking the buffered ETF space. It's interesting that, we would choose today to be the day to attack the buffered ETF space when the industry, the buffered industry, has been around since the late 1980s. It's a multi-billion, if not trillion-dollar global market. But what we saw from AQR was, what I think Cliff would call is a devastating takedown of buffered ETFs. But I think the thing is, what they ended up attacking was a massive space that's been around for 45 years or so, since the 80s. And those buffered structured notes have been used by institutions and high net worth investors for a very long time to deliver exactly what we defined at the beginning. They want a defined outcome. They want to know with certainty what their upside opportunity is, what their downside protection level is, and how many months or years we need to hold in order to get there. What the AQR analysis did, the first paper was lump together derivative income funds, which are not buffer ETFs by any stretch of the means. That's a category of derivative income funds, which we could talk about on another another episode, and then defined outcome funds, and then other options trading strategies. They took three very different things, all might have the word options in them, put them in a single bucket, and gave it a single return stream. So that's a little bit like reviewing the transportation industry by averaging up Ferraris and school buses and bicycles and, you know, boats, to use another gym analogy, and then concluding that all transportation is terrible because the average speed is low. Like, that's just in a very impossible thing to do, and you really shouldn't do it that way. It reminds me of a book we read in college called How to Lie with Statistics. You can basically illustrate anything you want, you know, using statistics. And I think that was a very haphazard way to combine three categories that use options and then call them buffers. That's just not true. So what's really happening here is that AQR didn't just write this piece when buffered strategies were $1 million minimum institutional products. They wrote it precisely at the time when these strategies became accessible to retail investors in a very large way. So, you know, we're not just attacking the ETF, essentially. He's saying that decades of institutional usage of buffer strategies has been incorrect. I think that is the ultimate conclusion that we're drawing, not that just the buffered ETF is incorrect or that it's not good, but that the entire, you know, last 40 years of institutional strategies with using buffers is wrong. But there's a bigger issue. There's a methodology issue, and that's how they analyze these funds. So they're looking at individual fund launches. So as I mentioned, a buffered ETF gives you a point-to-point exposure. It's designed to deliver that upside to a cap with a built-in protection level over a one-year outcome period. So if you buy in at the beginning, you can be sure you're going to be getting that upside cap rate. If the underlying index, like the S&P, moves up, you're going to capture that up to the cap. You'll be protected to the buffer level on the downside. But that completely misses the way that AQR and analyze these completely misses how the products actually work. So they took that entire category. Some might have started in January, some February, some August, some start every single month, and they lumped it all together. So you're not actually comparing a defined outcome to, you know, your cash and stock mix. It's like buying a one-year CD halfway through its term and then complaining about the pro-rata returns not matching the full CD rate. You just cannot do it that way. And I think that's what a lot of financial professionals that we've seen in the industry, also competitors that, you know, became our friends for a few days while they, you know, also saw, you know, I guess an unvalue, if that's the right word, in what AQR was doing. But what they fundamentally missed was that buffer ETFs can deliver certainty. And that's actually, as an investor, what you're investing in. You think about a 65-year-old retiree who needs growth in the market, but cannot afford a 30% drawdown, or maybe it's a 15% drawdown. With buffer ETFs, you can dial in exactly the risk level that you're comfortable with and tie it to a reward level that you can choose. So maybe it's a 10% buffer with a growth capped at, you know, maybe 12-15%. Maybe it's a 30% protection level with a, you know, 9% cap rate. Or in our case, we offer 100% protection ETFs with about 8-10% upside cap rates, depending on your underlying reference index. So now you can actually use buffer ETFs to solve real world problems. And then the last point here is, you know, there's a benchmark, you know, issue where the AQR model was using a stocks plus cash approach. You know, that benchmark sounds, you know, somewhat academic. It doesn't actually exist in the real world. You would have to dynamically rebalance between, you know, S&P 500 and cash. And, you know, trying to put clients in and telling them to hold 40% of their portfolio in cash through a financial advisor, that's a tough sell. So buffer ETF actually can help solve advisor problems as well, not just theoretical portfolio optimization. The other point I would make, if I could agree with AQR for a second, and if they, you know, just take the natural conclusion that they made, that owning the S&P 500 plus cash historically over the last few years has beaten, you know, let's say a 15% buffer strategy, or in their case, a conglomerate of a bunch of option strategies, why not optimize that cash? Why not move 40% of that cash into a 100% buffer ETF? Well, now you've gotten almost twice the risk-free rate on the upside. And so now you can actually use buffer ETFs to implement AQR's idea, their own conclusion, and beat AQR's conclusion by using buffer ETFs. So I think there's a market reality check that needs to happen. If you want pure buy and hold exposure to the market, just buy the S&P 500, hang on for the ride. But if you don't want or can't afford the roller coaster, maybe it's emotionally or financially, buffers let you choose, you know, keeping the roller coaster analogy, how many loops do you want? How far are you willing to fall? And I think the market gets this. There's over $60 billion in assets tied to the ETF alone, buffer ETFs alone. Advisors are allocating money to these. It's similar adoption in the annuity side. The UIT side is growing. The structured note side is seeing value. So I think that that's not just speculation, but that's validation.
Matt, I especially like what you were saying. I never thought of it that way. But why not use a 100? Why doesn't AQI look and say, hey, yeah, let's use, rather than cash, the 100% buffer ETF?
You should. Because yeah,
absolutely. I consider that a cash light, not quite cash because of the reasons I said the fee, but it is definitely a cash like holding, and it can give you a better return than parking your money in a high yield savings account or in a bank CD. At least for a point, there could be a time. I remember, gosh, probably right around 2020 to 2021 or two, on, this is before 100% buffered ETFs came out, folks, on the FIA side, fixed indexed annuity side, which were pretty much all that existed for the average Joe Schmo, unless you got into structured notes. On that side, you had cap rates down at 2 or 3%. Now, granted, cash was paying less than 1, so you were still coming out significantly ahead. But there can be a time where, in the future, these cap rates drop to a very low rate, and you might want to look, at least temporarily, at other options. But if the cap rate on a buffered product with 100% buffer, Matt, is at 2 or 2.5, 3, I don't think cash is yielding more than 1. Lord only knows what bonds are doing. And it might get to the point where you just say, you know, there's no other place to put my money. We're back in these low interest rate environments. I know Trump keeps pushing for a 300 basis point cut in the interest rates, which ain't going to happen. Right. But interest rates will, I think, drop again. And I wish they wouldn't. I don't want to go down that road. I'm a retirement planner. I want retirees to be able to earn income. I don't care about savers and borrowers anymore. That's not our clientele. That's not mm-hmm. who we're speaking to here on the podcast. You don't want interest rates to go down, folks. It isn't going to help you. It's going to hurt you. And I hope the Fed doesn't cut interest rates, because from a historical standpoint, it's still outrageously low. Anyways, I digress. Let's get back on topic.
No, I
like
what right.
you said there, though. Oh, go ahead, Matt. What?
No, I think you're right. And just to reiterate, I'm not saying that AQR's conclusion is accurate, but what I am saying is even if you take their conclusion, there's ways to use buffered ETFs to improve upon what they've concluded.
Do you know how? Because I couldn't find anywhere. I'm sure it's somewhere. I just couldn't find it. How did they get the percent the exposure to equity? How did they come up with, oh, this should be 50-50, 60-40, 70-30? How did they do that when it's 100% in the reference asset? I'm confused.
Well, I think the if I were to do it, the best way that I would try to match the line of the conglomerate of derivative income, buffers, and options strategies, as defined by Morningstar, I don't, you know, we now know what that line would look like, but I don't know that that's an exercise that anybody would really take on. But if you wanted to create that historical return stream, then you could, you know, tool around with the combination of stocks and bonds that would deliver, you know, a similar combination or a similar historical experience. And so, you know, that's how I would try to match that. It's called backfitting, and it's not something that we would recommend. But that's how I would do it.
Okay. Chris, do you have any questions?
Well, I think my sense for this public back and forth that's happening is that I think there's a misapplication to the use of the buffered ETFs in that, and Matt, you know, alluded to this, that if you're looking for long-term market performance, that, you know, getting into something that has a cap that's, you know, periodically during strong upward market performance, you're going to hit that cap, which is going to affect your overall long-term rate of return on a, you know, a long-term hold. You shouldn't be surprised that the overall performance is going to lag behind not having something with the cap. But the whole point is you're willing to take the cap, right, in exchange for some other benefit, and that other benefit being the downside protection, which you don't have, which if you're looking at a 30-year time horizon, you're not, you know, that's probably not your focus. But if you're looking at dollars that you need to spend 3 years from today, what happens on the downside is very impactful, because it isn't just in your statement on your portfolio that you experience it. It might actually undermine your ability to do something you wanted to do, which by amassing all these assets to enter into retirement, the whole point of having them is that you can convert them into life experiences and benefits for your family. And if that's put in jeopardy because of, you know, early losses, we get into that sequence of returns conversation again, that boy, having that protection is of value, right? And you get that value by volunteering to have a cap on that particular position. So, I think it's really easy to, you know, compare this inappropriately to something else and then come to the strange conclusion it's inferior. One or the other is inferior, but that's because you were talking about apples and oranges, right? It's not, you know, they're maybe in the fruit basket, but they're quite different, and they're probably not even as close as apples and oranges.
I think you've highlighted two specific things. There's a behavioral aspect, you know, which is, can I weather market storms? You know, when the market crashes happen, you know, can I batten down the hatches and you know, continue to weather that out? That's a behavioral, you know, problem that you might be able to solve by just riding out the storm. But as you enter retirement, as you age, you enter this retirement risk zone, and that's when your behavioral problem starts to become a mathematical problem. And like you said, the simple version of sequence of returns is that you cannot combine portfolio withdrawals as you enter retirement with a market correction. That puts you on a very troublesome mm-hmm. path. It's like kicking your portfolio while it's down. And yep. if you kick it early enough, it can stay down and have a difficult time recovering. So I think that's where a lot of this lies. You know, the real test isn't whether buffer ETFs beat some artificial beta adjusted benchmark. It's whether they help investors achieve their goals with the certainty that they're looking for. You know, I like a good risk premium strategy as well as the next person. But in certain markets, those may not work. And if you're talking about people's life savings, you know, they need more certainty than, well, on occasion, this just breaks down. And so what people, I think, are looking for, and the reason buffers have made a strong impact, is because of their ability to deliver certainty. You know, they're solving for the behavioral, you know, can I sleep at night? And the mathematical, can I still retire on time? And is this nest egg going to last me for my lifespan?
Exactly. Excellent. As we wrap up, folks, a couple of things. I do want to confirm I am correct. It was the University of Connecticut's endowment that made some headlines not too long ago when they sold nearly all of their hedge fund exposure and alt exposure and replaced it with buffered ETFs. And they cited cost, efficiency, simplicity, liquidity, in managing downside protections during via options, which I believe, Matt, AQR specifically called out against options. And if you have any feedback on that, when I finish this little thing on University of Connecticut, please chime in. I believe they lambasted options. But here, the University of Connecticut's endowment is saying, hey, buffered ETFs are cheaper, more efficient, liquid, simple, and can manage downside protections via options, as they said, instead of bespoke hedge fund strategies. And I got this from a website called hedgeweek.com. And I found that rather interesting. But on investmentnews.com, they actually quote the gentleman from University of Connecticut. His name is David Ford. And they said, quote, this takes the complexity out of hedging. And I think that's what people, at least this particular endowment, and I'm sure there'll be others to follow, perhaps. I don't know. I don't think the alt world, the private equity world, the private debt world, the hedge fund world is going to go down without a fight. But if you start to look at buffered products, how I want you as retirees to look at them. First thing, throw away your accumulation mindset. We keep telling you when you retire, it's the opposite. That whole Seinfeld episode where George did the opposite of what he ever did. Everything he always did never really worked out. He did the opposite. He got a job with the New York Yankees and he picked up this really hot blonde. Watch the episode. It's funny. Your retirement is the opposite of everything you have ever done. So why the heck are you going to enter it using the same investment strategies you did to accumulate wealth? You're not accumulating anymore. And stop comparing things always to the market. If you buy a 100% buffered product, yes, your interest or your earnings is not interest. Inside an annuity would be interest. In Matt's product, it would be a long-term cap gain if you hold it for 1 year and a day. But your earning, your growth might be tied to the reference asset. And Matt, I think yours is the S&P or the NASDAQ 100. It might be tied to those reference assets, but you're not exposed to the risk of those reference assets because of the hedging or the buffering, if you will, via options that Matt's firm and others like his have built in, folks. So just recognize that there are sometimes, either through ignorance from some talking heads, podcasters, and bloggers that I have read, or, and I don't want to throw AQR under the bus because I do deeply respect them, but I do feel there's an ulterior motive on par with Mr. I hate annuities and so should you. I hate buffered products and so should you. And I sit there and look and say, well, Ken hates annuities because he wants to manage your money. Maybe a company that does not do their hedging via options doesn't really want people going to what the University of Connecticut has said is efficient, more liquid, simpler, lower cost. So let's come out with an article. Don't let yourself fall victim to that. Before you wrap up, Matt, I believe AQR had issues with options. I could be wrong on that. Do you remember, did they specifically call out trying to hedge via options?
No, you're right. It's a little nuanced, but they were essentially saying that options are structurally expensive all of the time. And so they're arguing that the premium you pay for protection is systematically higher than the benefit you receive, regardless of market conditions. So I think they're making a structural argument that, you know, option premiums are just always expensive relative to their payoffs. But that misses I think it misses 2 points. It misses the point of insurance. You know, you don't buy car insurance because it's actuarially profitable. You buy it because you can't afford the tail risk. You can't afford to buy a brand new car if you crash it and don't have insurance. So, you know, there is that component. The other one is, you don't have to guess. You don't have to guess at how expensive the options premiums are. You know exactly the upside opportunity you have, the downside protection level that you have, and how long you have to hold in order to get there. So, you know, regardless of the actual cost of the options, you can know exactly what you're in for. And that, I think, is a better way to think about it. And then as markets become volatile, you know, if you're building a buffered strategy, the vol premium goes up and you can actually get a higher cap rate when you strike those options. And so there's a lot of reasons why, you know, using options is a great way to do it. You know, I appreciate the Seinfeld references, you know, the Bizarro Jerry episode, I think, is, you know, kind of what came to mind. There's, you know, like the buffered crowd, and then there's this other, you know, maybe Bizarro world on the other side of town that has, you know, opposite ideas of how to obtain risk management. You know, if we're using the more simple, easy to understand protection strategies, you know, maybe they're using the complex factor models, but that might be a stretch of an analogy.
Okay. Matt, as we wrap up, I'm looking through the emails. When I announced you were going to come on the show, we've got 4 emails, and then I'm looking through others, and there's at least another 6 or 7 asking about buffered products. Would we be able to entice you to come on the show again in the future and answer these questions? And I'm sure after this show, there's going to be some questions.
Sure, that'd be great.
Okay, well, Chris and I will find a time to do that, and we'll bring you on. So folks, if you have questions for Matt, a pro or con on what he was discussing today, fire them off. It'd be helpful in the subject line if you put like buffer ETF or AQR or Matt or something like that. That'll just allow me to know that you have a question and I'll flag it. And then we'll try to get Matt to come on. I don't know if we'll be able to answer them all, but maybe we can entice him to answer 6, 7, or 8 of these questions.
Perfect.
That, and there's some new stuff from Calamos that I think could be interesting for our listeners as well. So maybe we could. I know
that would have to be a whole separate show.
I know. Matt's going to be have a new product. Matt's yes. A very busy guy, so I'm actually surprised he's willing to come on our show.
Oh, this is great. Often, yeah, I can give you the 15-second teaser on that. So in the structured note marketplace, we talked about buffers. The biggest segment of that structured note market is the auto call. So in ETF world, covered call strategies dominate derivative income. In the structured note world, it's the auto call. You can think of it a lot like a bond whose coupon and principal are just tied to equity markets. We've brought that whole space into the ETF world, and we've had some early success there. So, you know, we'll leave that one out there for next time.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting for our listeners. So we'll talk about that. And seems like they're coming up with new stuff every few months. So we can just have a regular revolving show where Matt comes on and shares the latest and greatest.
As long as people don't get bored of us, we'll keep on showing up.
Okay, that sounds good.
So I got to say, Matt, I enjoyed your interview that came out a few days ago on Advisorpedia.
Good.
I hadn't seen you. You and Chris share a lot in common. I did want to point that out. So,
In what way?
We should get a photo of the two of you together.
Is this like a no hair joke?
Or probably.
This is a follically challenged
That's usually
joke.
Where this yes. goes.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. We offset that by a stronger use of the English language.
That's right. That's right. Our heads are just more efficient.
Yeah.
I guess all the hair that I have, it takes so much energy to grow. It took a lot
Maybe
of it from
it
the
is.
Mastery of the English language.
That could that's be right. it. That could be it. So
we all get 100 points in life. I think that's it. That's the conclusion.
It's where they go. It's
that's right.
Right, exactly. Well, thanks a lot, Matt. Thanks, everybody, for listening. If you've got related questions, sounds like Matt's agreed to come back and answer some questions. Jim's got some, but if you've got others, just send them to Jim directly, jim@jimhelps.com, and put in the subject line that's a question for Matt would work, or a question on buffered ETFs would work as well. And we'll look forward to having Matt on the show again. So you have a nice evening, Matt. And Jim, it's basically dinner time back where you are, back east. So
yeah, it is. It's 6:11. I got to go grab a bite to eat.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks a lot, you guys, for joining me. And we'll be back with everybody else next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.